Welcome to The Range on the Believe Network, the number one podcast network for professionals. I'm Ralph Irvin, and today we are talking to a man who, some may say, can see the future. More likely is that he sees the past and uses that to look ahead as he prognosticates in the world of professional golf. But he does so much more. And if you need a tee time, he may be able to help you out there as well. This week on The Range, we head to Las Vegas, where we are joined by Brady Cannon, host of Long Shots on the Vegas Sports and Information Network, and so much more. Brady, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Ralph.
We always start our talks out here on The Range with a very simple question. When did golf enter into your life?
Probably when I was about 12 years old is when I started playing. My grandfather gave me a set of his old clubs and kind of taught me the game and started playing as a junior. I remember having a junior driver that I loved, you know, one of those, chopped down, sawed off drivers, you know, I played with that when I was like 12 or 13 years old and, continued to play sparingly, but really, started playing a lot more. When I got to Las Vegas, which when I was about 25 years old, and that's when I got into the golf business shortly after moving to Las Vegas and started playing a lot more. And then, probably around year 2000 or late 90s is when I got into betting on golf and not only playing, but, you know, getting into the whole fantasy golf and making some wagers on some of the major events to, you know, future tickets on to win the Masters and that type of thing. And then I got even further involved in betting head-to-head matchups. And now here I am hosting a golf betting show on VSiN. So it's been about 40 years of golf in one form or another. And now all of the above.
You jumped ahead, but we'll get back to there. After school, you went into radio, and that's what took you to Las Vegas, as you said, essentially in the mid-90s. What do you recall in that transition from going from being in the Bay Area in a bigger city to going to Las Vegas, which at that time was growing, but certainly not what it is now?
I thought I'd be back in 5 years. You know, at that time I was in the radio business and you know how the radio business can be so transient. I thought I'd be in Las Vegas for 5 years and, you know, told my wife, we'll be, you know, moving back or moving somewhere else, you know, soon. So don't worry about Las Vegas. And, you know, here I am 27 years later. So, you know, obviously that didn't happen, but I actually got out of the radio business, you know, came here to Las Vegas for a radio job, but ended up getting into the golf business about 2 years later and dropping kind of the radio thing for a while and got into working at the golf course itself and then got into the tee time business, making golf reservations for people coming to Las Vegas and always kind of did a little bit of radio here and there on the side. And then really, you know, jumped into the radio head first again, in 2011, after I won the, Westgate Super Contest and really have been, full fledged into the whole radio thing, and the media and, you know, from a golf perspective ever since then.
Living in Vegas, did it hit you fast or was it something gradual where the sports books start to grab your attention? And as a sports guy, you start to pay attention to, hey, there's something going on there that I want to be a part of.
I loved it immediately, Ralph. And I mentioned that very first radio job when I came to town, we did a show out of the MGM Grand Race and Sportsbook. And that was back in the day when it was indeed grand. It was a huge race and sports book at the MGM. And boy, it was just overwhelming with the races and all the horses going on. I still to this day have a little bit of a grasp of horse racing because I just sat there and by osmosis learned about the sport and the jockeys. Mm-hmm. And we weren't even covering that, you know, we were talking baseball and football and all that stuff, but I immediately loved the sports book atmosphere. And, you know, as a sports fan, and it's like one big giant man cave. So yeah, it was pretty easy to fall in love with.
You're working in golf, that keeps you interested in sports. And then 2011 comes and you win that super contest. For those that aren't aware, aren't really in tune to what the super contest is, talk about that.
Yeah, the Super Contest is a very historic football contest, and I honestly believe it's the most prestigious football handicapping contest in the world. And you know, now Circa has been around for a couple years with their Circa Million contest and that type of thing, but the Westgate Super Contest was the OG, so to speak, and has been going on for close to 35 years now. Was, I believe, started many years ago by a legendary bookmaker who just retired about a month ago or so, by the name of Art Manteris, I think, started the Super Contest. But in its inception, it really became just a contest for the wise guys. Not you might have had 40 or 50 or 150 participants, and it was all professional gamblers in Las Vegas. And it started to grow and grow a little bit here and there over the years. And now, you know, you get a couple 3,000 people participating, and certainly not all professionals, but you know, that's kind of been the case with sports betting and contests. We've seen it grow exponentially like that, but you pick five games against the spread in an NFL week. So every week, week one through now week 18, you will pick five games against the spread. The entire card is there for you to choose from, but you're only allowed to pick up to five. And the lines come out on Wednesday for the contest, and the book will typically try and guess where they expect that line to be come kickoff on Sunday. But it is a stale line. It's not fluctuating like it is on the live board. So you're picking against a stale number, which can be advantageous for sure. Just a historic event. And, you know, when I won it in 2011, there was 517 participants, which at that time was a record. That was a record number of participants in the Super Contest. And pre-COVID, I think they broke a record with about 3,500 participants and a first prize of nearly 2 million, I believe. So, I wish I kind of had won it then rather than back then.
So. No, but what that does, especially in that town, is it gets you notoriety. And as such, people then want to talk to you. And that took you, as you said, back to radio, because suddenly this is a guy with credentials.
Yeah, you're right. That certainly earned me some street cred. And it's really been life changing. I mean, I have so many things to thank for that victory in the Super Contest. And I've, you know, I'll pat myself on the back too. I've been aggressive about parlaying that into career moves and what have you. And it's a big reason why I work with VSIN today. And like you say, why I got back into the radio thing, did a radio show for 6 years with Ken Thompson that followed the Super Contest victory. And, you know, it's led to me, you know, writing articles. And so it's really opened up a tremendous number of doors. And again, I've wanted to push that envelope and use that as a vehicle to open those doors. And it has, and I've been very fortunate and still, you know, keep the Tee Times job on the side as well. So, you know, it's pretty cool working in the golf business, talking about golf and sports, and, you know, I'm fortunate.
You were able to really take then what you've had success with, what I'd assume you have love with, and really kind of take the gambling, take the golf, combine them into becoming kind of a golf gaming specialist. Fair to say?
Yeah, thank you. I've been able to marry my hobby with my profession, right? And I don't know which one is which, but no, it's been really the best of both worlds. To do something you love and then, like I say, you know, expand upon it and roll it into the world of gaming and being able to combine the two. And, you know, golf and gambling kind of go hand in hand anyway. You know, you go back to the beginning of the game overseas in Scotland, you know, and they're playing for a couple of bucks or whatever it is. And, you know, so gambling on the golf course has always gone on. And obviously gambling has always gone on in Las Vegas. And Las Vegas has become a real golf destination, and not necessarily a golf destination. That's probably the wrong way to put it. But golf is certainly an amenity that Las Vegas offers and is right up there with some of the finest golf courses in the world. So, you know, it's kind of a perfect storm with all those things coming together. And, you know, me being able to form a career right in the middle of it all.
As a non-Las Vegas local who has been a lot and played a lot of golf there, I can definitely say it's a destination. It should be a destination for golf, whether you want to say golf's the amenity or the casinos and the pools are the amenity, one or the other. But I mean, it's right on par as far as I'm concerned. And certainly, you know that from working with people that come and visit all the time.
Yeah. And what I mean by that, Ralph, is it's different from a Myrtle Beach or a Florida or Arizona where people are really going on golf junket type excursion trips. Las Vegas, most of the people, you know, will come here. Most of the people come here for the gambling, you know, but golf is a thing that they'll choose to do. And maybe one day they'll hang out by the pool and, you know, this and that and the other. It's not necessarily the focal point of every trip to town. But you're right. I mean, there are world-class courses here, a number of them. And so, you know, it's just, it's more diverse, I guess, if you will, on a getaway town versus, you know, some other places around the country that truly are strictly golf destinations. I would say Las Vegas, you know, golf competes as far as activities with, you know, shooting ranges and, you know, SUV trips and Lake Mead and, you know, all kinds of activities that you have here to choose from off of the strip.
A layperson can certainly understand, okay, I'm picking Justin Thomas or Xander Schauffele to win this tournament. But there's a lot more options and a lot more complexities available in today's golf gaming environment, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And golf betting has grown probably more so than any sport in the last decade or so. Maybe only UFC is right there with it. And golf maybe actually has grown percentage wise more so than UFC, because I think UFC was always being bet on pretty heavily, but both of those sports were the first two sports to come back during the quarantine last year. And people were kind of looking for something to do while they're sitting there on their couch inside their house. And those two sports were readily available and they were the only game in town. So golf certainly grew in that. And even prior to that, golf betting was becoming more and more popular for a long time. And, you know, it's like betting the futures market to win the Super Bowl. You can't just play the favorite. And you bring up Justin Thomas and Xander Schauffele, who are usually very high up on the board at short prices. But you have to do your homework. And sometimes Justin Thomas and Xander Schauffele aren't always a good fit for this particular golf course. It's very much like NASCAR handicapping. And I've learned a lot about NASCAR in handicapping golf, that certain drivers are good for certain tracks. And it's the same type of thing in golf. Certain players, their skill sets are built for certain types of golf courses. Now, you take the best players in the world, and they can pretty much win anywhere at any time. But certainly most players, if not all players, have strengths and weaknesses. And some courses cater to certain players better than others. So you have to kind of go through all of that before just plucking the top names off the board and betting on them.
Well, we'll get to your strategies or ideas in a moment. But it's funny because Vegas didn't have to invent this, because gambling on professional golf is been so big overseas, especially in the UK for years. I mean, it's notable at the Open Championship, where it was always talked about, are players placing money on themselves? Are they placing it on their people they're playing with, etc.? But that's long been a legendary thing that made its way over here in recent years.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. I remember the story about Rory McIlroy winning a bet that he had on his son would win the British Open at least once years. Over the next 10 years or something like that. And he cashed out pretty nicely on that. But, you know, thank goodness that it has evolved and made its way over into the States. Obviously, it always has been in Las Vegas. But with the new PASPA, you know, bill passing, I believe now it's 30 states that have legalized sports betting in America. And we're probably headed for at least 49. I don't know if it'll ever pass in Utah, but I think just about everybody else will probably get there eventually, maybe in the next 5 years.
For those even that can't necessarily do full-on wagers, there's things like Chirp that allow you to do fantasy wagering so that you still can be involved in whatever the golfing game of the week will be.
Yeah, you're right. And Chirp's a cool thing. I was introduced to that about a year ago. And what's fun about Chirp, and I think eventually gambling on golf will get there at regular brick and mortar and online sports books as well, mobile accounts, if you will, where you're going to be able to in-game, like shot to shot, like, will he hit the fairway? Will he make this putt? You know, yes or no type of thing. And Chirp, you know, his approach that, I haven't taken a look at Chirp in a little while, but I think they have had some stuff bordering on that type of thing. And I think other sports books are probably headed that direction too. Obviously there's not going to be huge limits or there's not going to be big limits. So you won't be able to bet a ton of money on something like that, but it sure would be fun. I used to do that with my buddies, a mutual friend of ours, JT the Brick. You know, we'd always go somewhere to watch the Masters, and we'd be sitting around with, you know, five or six guys. And I'd be like, okay, $1, he makes this putt, $1, he misses this fairway. And I think you're going to be able to do that in a real life sports book here pretty soon.
Well, and you think about like the match that was on last week, in that case, between Bryson and Phil, who are long hitters that don't necessarily hit it straight all the time, are they just going to put it in the fairway? You could easily be sitting there betting on that hole to hole and everything else. So, I mean, their applications are so available because of the mobile programs that are out there.
Well, if you watch that match too, you saw flashing across the screen, DraftKings was continually updating wagers that you could make at a DraftKings sportsbook. You know, Bryson and Rodgers will, when we get to the 15th hole, will still be in the lead. And there was odds, of course, associated with that. And who's going to be closest to the pin on this hole. So they really had something to that effect right there on your TV screen for that match. And that certainly added to the excitement. That course was so beautiful. I mean, I think that was as much fun as anything, is just to see that place. But that was kind of fun. It was especially fun to have a couple of those things during the quarantine. Like I mentioned, UFC and golf being the only sports really that were going on. It was great to have an activity, you know, those couple of charity events that they had on the golf course during the quarantine as well.
No, and you mentioned that. I mean, that up there in Montana, but going back to that first one that you mentioned at Seminole, that was enough reason just to watch, just to see the course. The golf was secondary.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's totally one of the reasons I tuned in, because, you know, you and I may never in our lifetime get to see Seminole, an extremely exclusive club there in Florida. And that was the match when Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy took on Ricky Fowler and Matthew Wolff. And that was a good time to watch. No, we were jonesing for anything during the quarantine to get our sports betting appetite wet. So that was certainly a good one to watch. And the other one was the match with Brady and Mickelson against Manning and Woods. And that was cool too.
I've long suggested that the way that they should do an event like that, and this goes back to the Monday night Tiger Woods showdowns battle at Bighorn and such, that they give these guys a bankroll at the beginning of the day, and this is your payout for your appearance. And that's your bank. Let's see how the pros
wager.
Let's see how the pros wager with this money.
Yeah.
Where they actually are putting for $100,000 or hitting a drive for that.
Tiger and Phil did a little bit of that when they played the match right around Thanksgiving in 2018 at Shadow Creek. I remember, you know, they were going back and forth with each other. Hey, you know, and it was for charity.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't maybe exactly like you're talking about, but they were given, you know, a charitable bankroll, if you will. And so, you know, that all adds to it. And I think, you know, every one of these things, they're getting a little bit more creative, and the gambling is becoming more and more prominent. So that's good for all of us in the sports betting marketplace.
We are coming up on the final major at the Open Championship. For you, do you put more stock into an event like this, or do you approach it the same way you would any standard week on tour?
Well, I, you know, putting more stock into it, I certainly put, I would say, more time and energy into handicapping it. I certainly spend more time and energy talking about it with folks like yourself. And, you know, I do a lot of radio stuff all over the country, which is great. And it's great to see that excitement for golf. The wagering, I usually probably end up risking a little bit more on it just because I'm so excited about the event and I want to, you know, and there's also more wagering options available too. Sure. At a lot of different places. They kind of increase the menu for the major championships. But that being said, it's not necessarily responsible to bet more on it just because it's the Super Bowl or something like that. It should be treated as a regular tournament. And I haven't bet a lot on the British Open yet. And I don't know if I will get to the same level that I was for the US Open or the Masters or what have you. You know, because as bettors, we do have to have discipline. That's really as important as anything. And if I don't see a lot of different things that I like in my handicap, if I don't find a lot of edges or things that match up, then maybe I won't be as vested. But certainly, you know, outside of the wagering aspect, I will be completely vested in watching it and enjoying it. So with any tournament, if you're not seeing anything that you like or any sport for that matter, you know, you don't necessarily bet more on the Super Bowl just because it's the Super Bowl. You have to treat them all the same, stay within your bankroll and stay within your discipline.
So let's talk technique or philosophy. What are some examples of what you would consider in setting a personal line or expectation for a tournament? What are some of the things that you like to factor in?
Well, I definitely look at current form and course form. And current form obviously is how a player is playing currently. Are they in a real funk or are they red hot? And then course form is, have they played well at this course before? Do they have a good history here at this course, or do they have a really lousy history? If you look at Bubba Watson, has never performed well in the U.S. Open and actually did pretty darn well at Torrey Pines. But you look at guys historically, have they done well at particular golf courses? And then I'll look at that particular golf course and try and whittle down what I think maybe the top five skill sets are going to be. Is it going to be driving distance, or is it going to be driving accuracy, or is it going to be a combination of both? Is it going to be proximity to the hole? Is it going to be strokes gained approach, putting, scrambling, you know, a lot of different factors. Three putt avoidance. That's one of the common things at Augusta National that will behoove you in your quest for a green jacket, is to avoid the three putts. So you go down the rankings there and look at different players in different areas that you think will match up to that particular golf course week in and week out. And then maybe you come up with, who knows, 30 or 40 different guys that make sense. And then I think you want to go, you take all that work that you've done, and then you take it to the odds board and say, okay, well, I've got this guy that looks like a medium play it by my numbers, but on the odds board, he's, you know, 5-1. That's not a real good value. So you want to kind of find the reverse, like a guy that really checks a lot of boxes in my research, but yet on the odds board, he's 100-1, you know, that's what you want to, and that's where the term comes in value. You know, you mm-hmm. want to try and find the $10,000 car that's being sold for five. So that's kind of the, where it starts and where it ends, you know, starting with current form and course form and the skill sets for the course, and then matching it up against the odds board and making your moves from there.
And when you think about something like the Open Championship, obviously you have, okay, who's going to win the tournament, and you can box a number of players into, you know, so if one of these guys wins, but what are some other special wagers that might be out there for something like this? Is there something where who's going to have the most birdies in the field, or who will have the best fairway percentage off the tee, or things like that available?
Yes and no. The most birdies available, what you might have, what you might find, and what I have seen is it's typically not as readily available in the U.S., but you mentioned wagering in the U.K. A lot of times their golf menu is much more extensive, and they might have something where they pit two players together. You know, who's going to have more birdies, Xander Schauffele or Justin Thomas? You might have a proposition bet like that, but the menus do get quite extensive for the major championships, much more so than just a regular week-to-week PGA Tour tournament. And you mentioned the futures board, the outright market to win the thing. right now I have three players in pocket. Usually for the majors, I end up with about eight, maybe nine. On a week to week basis, I'm usually betting five or six. Mm-hmm. But like I said, you know, for the majors, I usually dive in a little deeper. And then I also play the top 10 and top 20 finishes. Now they even go top five or top 30. But all of those top, you know, position of finish markets, I like to dabble in those because mm-hmm. you're giving yourself more leeway than just one golfer winning the tournament outright. Those are right. always fun because they're big long shots and they're big payouts. But I put the least amount of risk in the outright market. And then I will probably double that amount of risk in the top 10, top 20 market. And then my highest amount of risk where I will bet a full unit will be on a head-to-head matchup. And that's where they'll have two golfers, and these are fictional matchups. They're not actual on the golf course, but the odds maker will create a matchup for, say, Matthew Wolf against Victor Hovland. And one guy is favored right. and one guy is the underdog. And you have to choose which player is going to score better over the course of the 4 days. And you can handicap that much better, like a football game, like a Steelers versus the Patriots. You can mm-hmm. handicap team A versus team B or player A versus player B much better. You have a much better chance of being right than you do of picking one winner out of 156 participants. So that's where I typically risk the most because it's where I have the best chance is the head-to-head matchup. And then you also, you know, what you kind of allude to, most birdies and fairway percentage and this type of thing, you will get a lot of markets for the majors, like lowest or highest finishing South African or best Canadian or best finishing former champion or best finishing, you know, player over 50 years old. So there's all different kinds of little derivative okay. markets like that for sure. It just kind of depends book to book on how detailed they get.
No, and you can't help but think of how big Brooks versus Bryson as a bet is that every sports book wants to get that down, because forget the handicapping part. People are just going to bet with who their heart tells them to, like they do with a lot of football games. And typically when that happens, that's good for the sports books.
Well, that's a great comment. And there's a lot of truth to that. And I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, I would bet that there probably will be some Bryson and Brooks props up at sports books all over the place because what, like what you say, no matter what, it's going to garner a lot of interest mm-hmm. and a lot of interest turns into dollars for the sports books. I mean, what, at the end of the day, what they really want is handle. They want volume of wagers. And so the higher level of interest and a bet like that might have as much interest as anything. So I imagine they would write a lot. And like you say, the books typically position themselves with the numbers. So at the end of the day, they have a very good chance of coming out a winner on those type of things. But, you know, the other thing is too, even if they were to take a loss on some Bryson versus Brooks stuff, it brings people to that window and interested in that golf tournament. So while they're shopping, they might buy a few other things, you know? So, it goes back to what bookmakers will tell you here in Las Vegas about the Vegas Golden Knights. They're always kind of quote unquote rooting against our team because everybody's betting on the Knights here in Las Vegas. So right. the sports books usually lose when the Knights win, but they don't mind taking that loss because the Golden Knights being in the mix and being at the forefront in the playoffs, the Stanley Cup, what have you, it brings interest to hockey overall. And at the end of the day, they do more handle.
People that live in Las Vegas don't necessarily visit the sports books on a regular basis. And if that gets people in, all the better.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
You interact with folks all the time and hear their stories. What are some common mistakes that folks should avoid in placing money down on a golf tournament?
Well, you know, you spoke about it. If you're going to just bet on your fan favorite, which many people were rewarded with at the PGA Championship when they bet on Phil Mickelson, you know, for just funny money. And he turned out to be a winner at, 300-1 or 200-1 or whatever he was. But, you know, obviously that doesn't happen too often. So you have to know what you're in it for. If you're absolutely just doing this for recreation, and you only do it a few times a year. Let's say you bet on the four majors and you always like to put money on Mickelson. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you're going to be a little bit more serious about it and handicap it, then, you need to take some time. And the other thing is, I mean, the golden rule, as you know, Ralph, you never want to mess around with more than you can afford to lose. So, I go back to the Super Bowl, or if it's a major championship, you know, just because it's a big event and it's on TV, you don't need to go throw gobs of money at the thing unless you can afford to lose that, because, right, you know, the majority of people that bet on sports do lose over time. So you just need to be responsible with it. Like anything, that's all. Have fun with it. I think one of the biggest things about sports betting being legalized all over the country is it's fun. There's so many sports fans all over the world, and I don't care if you have $5 on a game or 5,000 on a game. It should also be a little bit of fun involved, I believe, when you're making that wager. So, keep it simple. Don't get over your skis. Make sure it's entertainment and you're not, risking the rent on this type of thing. And do your homework if you really do plan on winning. And the other thing that we always preach, Ralph, is shop around. I mean, you've got a lot of different sports books out there that are posting a lot of different prices. And it's just like grocery shopping. You know, if you're trying to find the best deal on a carton of eggs, shop around, because over time it adds up. And it's the same thing with sports betting. Make sure you're getting the best price.
Well, that leads me to a question. Looking back at your history, not the Super Contest, but can you think of something where you went shopped, found a great price, and had a huge win because of it? Or maybe just a win that you didn't see coming. Somebody had a late charge at a tournament and out of nowhere made your bet a nice cash.
Well, you know, the Super Contest obviously was the biggest needle in a haystack surprise, turning $1,500 into $320,000. That was quite a payout. But the biggest golf future I've ever hit was 60-1 last year on Tyrrell Hatton when he won at Bay Hill. And again, I did my full blown handicap on that. So it wasn't necessarily a shock to me, but when, it's really electric when, as Sunday rolls around on a golf tournament and there's your guy at the top of the leaderboard and it's quite a sweat, the back nine holes. And that day there happened to be a ton of wind and it was a real grind. But it's so exciting when they come through. The most recent one for me to hit was Jon Rahm at the US Open. Now, he was a real short shot, so that certainly wasn't unexpected, and you never expect it, but he certainly wasn't a long shot. I had him at 13-1. They're all fun, Ralph. I tell you, hitting an outright is just fantastic, and it's probably the most fun part of betting golf. It's so exhilarating because it is a big payout, and watching that unfold down the stretch. But the Super Contest, like I say, that's absolutely the biggest score and may never be rivaled again in my lifetime. But, the other ones are just kind of small fireworks that have been fun along the way.
It's funny you mentioned Jon Rahm. I'm reminded, that's right. Back in March, I put a futures on Rahm to win a major this year. And sure enough, that hit. So that's a ticket waiting for its return to Vegas.
There you go. Nice job. Good work. Now, what was that, about 3-1?
I think it was about 4 or 5.
Very good.
It wasn't big, but it was a nice little.
But that's a smart bet, right?
Yeah.
We talk about that. I mean, sometimes
small number and a small payout.
And sometimes people gravitate towards a parlay effect, if you will, when you want to put down a little to win a lot, and that doesn't always work out. And sometimes you have to go to the chalk. I often reference Floyd Mayweather, and when he was listed at a price on a boxing match at -500, hey, that was cheap. Sometimes you got to lay the 500 to win 100, because Mayweather, as we know, he never lost. And so you making a very positive expected value on Jon Rahm there, we knew this guy was going to win one time, and you didn't necessarily go down the board and say, I want to get greedy and I want to hit a guy that's 50-1. You made a smart play there, and obviously you got rewarded for it.
Now, I do have to ask, though, on the flip side, you saw the winner coming. He's coming. Oh, no. There went that bet. A bad beat that might have hit you on the golf course.
You know, I had it last week, Ralph. Oh, man. At the Rocket Mortgage Classic, I can't recall ever having a leaderboard more surrounded and not getting the winner home. I had Alex Noren, who came up one shot shy of the playoff and, you know, parred the two easy.
Finished well ahead of the field.
Yeah, parred the two easiest holes coming down the stretch or would have gotten into the playoff. I had Troy Merritt, who was in the playoff. Mm-hmm. I had Jason Kokrak, who was tied for the lead on the back nine on Sunday. Mm-hmm. I had Chris Kirk, who was, I think, one shot off of the lead on the back nine on Sunday. And I had Cameron Tringali, who made a big run to get into the top 10 on Sunday. And my colleague on my long shot show had Joaquin Niemann, who was also in the playoff. And not one of us could get Cam Davis home. It was that was a pretty tough one to swallow. But, you know, that wasn't necessary. It's hard to say that was a bad beat. He did chip in for an eagle, I believe, on 17 or something like that for a 50-yard bunker shot. Maybe it was for a birdie or whatever. So that was a little stroke of luck for Davis right there. But, you know, when you've obviously handicapped a tournament so well, and you've got five or six guys in the mix there, it's hard to say, oh, I got robbed, you know? that was one I can certainly most think of recently that was a tough pill to swallow.
Well, we like to wrap up our conversations here on the range by jumping into the Wayback Machine. And since we do largely focus on equipment, we love to know, is there a club that you've used in golf that jumps out as a personal favorite? Something that when you think, like, it probably has already popped in your head, a favorite club that you're like, you know, that was a great club and I'm glad I don't use it now because, you know, I've got something better, but boy, that thing performed.
Well, you know what? I have one of those and it's still in my bag and it's a Titleist PT-13 or it's a PT-15. Titleist PT-15. And I want to say this was probably out sometime in the 80s. It's a metal wood, a fairway wood. And the 15 is for 15 degrees. It's mm-hmm. It's basically a three wood, but it's kind of a spoon-like head. And the PT is for pro trajectory. And it just does have a beautiful ball flight when it comes off the face. And actually, some pretty decent pros used to use that, including Billy Andrade, and then even some bigger names like Vijay Singh and Tiger Woods used to carry a Titleist PT-13 or 15 in their bag. So that one's always been a favorite of mine, an old gem that I still do use to this day. Just had a new shaft put in it to keep it up to date, if you will, but a beautiful old club.
Well, Brady, I know our listeners will want to reach out to you. So first, if they're coming to Vegas, they want a tee time. How do they get you?
Yeah, you can find me at Tee Times USA, and our website is lvteetimes.com, LV like Las Vegas, TEETIMES.com. And you can find me there. You can shoot me an email or what have you, and we'll get you hooked up with a tee time when you come to Las Vegas. We have access to every course in town, private and public. So, you know, that's where some of the advantages lie by using our service. We don't charge a fee. Our service is free, which is great. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Las Vegas Golfer. And you can also find me at VSiN, the Vegas Stats and Information Network at VSiN.com.
Well, I know people are going to want to get your bets for the Open Championship. So when is Long Shots? Where can they find it on VSiN?
Yeah, we will record Long Shots. And we have a couple of great guests that are going to be on our program. Excellent golf handicappers as well. That comes out at VSiN.com/podcasts. And then it also airs on our airwaves later at night and early in the morning as well. So you can go to vsin.com/podcasts and check that out. It's the Long Shots podcast and it's all for free. So it's pretty easy to find the information.
All right, Brady, thanks for taking the time to join us here on the range.
I appreciate it, Ralph. Thank you.
That was Brady Cannon, and he absolutely has a passion for the game of golf. And of course, for placing bets on the action. He's a fun follow on Twitter, and of course, you can catch him on VSiN if you want to add that extra excitement into your golf viewing experience. Before we go, this is the week of the Open Championship, and yes, it is the final major of the year. But it is far from the last big golf event of the year, because like it or not, the Olympics are big, and they matter. You likely have read or will read columns from supposedly serious golf writers lamenting the so-called weak field that'll play in Tokyo. The Masters champion will be there, as will the US Open champ. 20 of the top 50 players in the world will be in action, and yes, that number may seem low. Guess what? 25 of the top 50 players in the world are from the US. Qualifying for the Olympics in any sport is an accomplishment. And as such, four Americans will play for the gold, as it should be. That means 21 US players ranked in the top 50 in the world did not qualify for Tokyo. All told, 23 players in the top 50 did not qualify. Tyrrell Hatton, Matthew Fitzpatrick, and Lee Westwood chose not to represent Great Britain, and that opened the door to Tommy Fleetwood. Is that the reason the field is weak? Is the absence of Louis Oosthuizen, Victor Perez, and Sergio Garcia so crucial to Olympic golf that their absence is too much to overcome? Hardly. Playing in the Olympics is an honor for every athlete from every nation around the world. Many want to go, but cannot. And that is how it's supposed to be. And as for Udain Mane from India, the lowest ranked player at number 365 in the world, he'll be an inspiration to his country, just like Eddie the Eagle was, or the Jamaican bobsled team. He is what the Olympic spirit is all about. And guess what? If he contends, it'll be a bigger story than we've seen in any major in recent memory. This is the golf tournament that we expect as viewers and as fans. Can it be enhanced? Can it be more engaging with a team concept? For sure. But these athletes compete as individuals. It's what they do. And they deserve the honor that comes with entering the arena, making the attempt, and competing with honor before returning to their homes, the better for it. No other sporting event is the Olympics. And finally, golf has the recognition and the opportunity to shine. Don't let some bitter, angry, historically diluted sports writers tell you any different. Enjoy the games and enjoy the golf. What's new for 2021 in golf equipment? Find out with the Golf Spotlight. We are dropping new features all the time, looking at clubs, accessories, footwear, and more. Go to thegolfspotlight.com, click on the YouTube subscribe button, and turn on those notifications so you never miss one of our features. There is always a lot to catch up on. Stay up to date on the range by following us on Instagram at thegolfspotlight. We are also on Twitter at golfspotlight. Welcome your comments everywhere. You've listened this far, so subscribe to The Range on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify or iHeart. We have new shows dropping every Wednesday. That'll do it for this episode of The Range. Enjoy the Open Championship and ask yourself, what do you think will happen? It should be unpredictable. That you can bet on. And we will talk to you next time, right here on The Range.